and welcome to Broadway Baby, the podcast taking one casual theater goer to full out fangirl. I'm your host and Broadway Baby at the same time this week, Alex Fasella. And this week I'm really excited to have one of my favorite people. He's a writer, director. He's the host of the Original Cast, which is an amazing podcast. I'm here with Patrick Flynn. How you doing, Patrick?
Hey, Alex. How's it going?
Pretty good. How's quarantine treating you?
Quarantine's treating us okay. We're not doing too bad. I got three kids, which is a lot, but it's, you know, we got a yard I can throw them into if they get too hyphy. So, you know, we're doing okay.
Like wild animals. Just like,
yep.
Just
holding it together.
Put them in the pen.
We've, because as you know, I've taken the podcast from basically bi-weekly to daily, which is a huge jump. And we've started doing, because for those of you who don't listen, I do a full interview every other Wednesday. And then on the in-between Wednesdays, I would do mini episodes that I call intermissions. So I was doing basically an interview every 2 weeks. And when we went into quarantine, I took the podcast daily with Thursday through Tuesday, short conversations with people. And then on Wednesday, still having the full interviews. But I decided to make the full interviews weekly instead of bi-weekly because it felt like every day we were doing a mini episode, and it would be cheating to then have another mini episode on a Wednesday. So I've been recording twice as many regular episodes as I normally do. So I've been listening to, because I like to listen to the musicals we're discussing three times before the interview. That's pretty much my musical intake has been the episodes we've been doing. Even if I know the show really well, because I've got to be ready to talk about it. Which has been a treat a couple times, because this episode that's coming out next, I don't know when you're putting this up, but the episode that'll be out on the 20th of May is going to be Chess, the musical that I talked about also on Broadway Baby. So you know I can talk about Chess till the cows come home. And that's been getting me through in a serious way.
Oh, you're doing Chess again.
Oh, we're doing Chess, my man. And I'm so excited. It's so much fun. There's so much to talk about with Chess.
I still have only listened to the concept album version of Chess, because like you came along at a point when we were still relatively figuring out
early.
How the podcast worked. And it was early. We had started with the conceit of we're going to focus on a particular album, and then that way we could repeat shows if we wanted to. But then it very rapidly, without my knowledge, just became, oh, we're just going to talk about the show and all versions are fair game. Yeah. So I like listened a lot to that concept album version, and then everyone's like, oh, you know the triple different endings where there's yogurt involved? I'm like, what are you people?
We had to jump around. And so, that'd be funny if that episode was like the watershed for you guys, because there's just no way you could talk about, and we do it on this next episode with Jake Beckhard, my guest, where like ostensibly he's there to talk about the Broadway recording, but you can't talk about just one version. We talk about the concert, we talk about the London studio recording, like you said. It's just, there's too much. There's too much, because as we say, actually Jake and I discovered the phrase, it's like Chess is like a Zen koan that no production has been the same. No one's ever seen the same production of Chess twice.
Yeah, I feel like there are as many iterations, maybe more, of plot points of Chess as there are to like an ending of a game of Clue.
Oh, sure. And just like Clue, it's funny you say that. One of the ideas I hit upon during the podcast, you'll hear me occur, is like, I want to do a production of Chess where the ending changes, where you don't know which ending you're coming to see. Because you could do it. It's only in that one moment where he decides whether to win the match or lose the match. It's a character's active decision. You could just turn it on a dime. The actors would have to know, obviously. I'm not crazy. But the audience wouldn't have any idea what the ending was going to be. And how many shows, period, can you say that for? And either way, it's bonkers. Yeah. Either way, it's bonkers. It doesn't matter. They're both bonkers.
Yeah, it's going to be equally crazy.
It's so crazy.
Either way. And maybe you just... It's opened up a rabbit hole. Maybe I have to go.
It says a lot about Chess that I can. It says a lot about Chess that I can change the ending, and it doesn't make that much difference. It doesn't, you know?
Yes,
it's different. It's not that different.
Because we were doing Chess, and when you discuss Chess, there is no time waste. You got to get really into it. I don't think we talked much about your history with theater, other than that you do your own podcast. So tell me about were you with your theater kid? Did you have a theater family? Like, tell me about your origin story.
Yeah, I am. I'm a theater kid. I've always been a theater kid. I was my family wasn't a theater family. They liked theater. We went to shows and we, you know, listened to, we had the cast recording for Les Mis and we played that kind of endlessly. And there were some other stuff. My family's really into entertainment though, kind of writ large, comedians, movies, all of that. And I just became a theater kid. I became a theater kid because my kindergarten teacher, I wouldn't shut up. I was a terrible child and an awful student. And so she put me on stage in our kindergarten production of Twas the Night Before Christmas. And she was right. It like, it hooked me instantaneously. And there was an outlet finally for this thing. People had to listen. So yeah, I've been a theater kid for forever and ever and ever.
I just imagine you getting, like, your parents getting the report card and then the little notes. It's like, disruptive in class, possible acting future?
I was thrown out of a Montessori school, yeah. Alex. I was a terrible child. The most, like, zen,
oh boy,
calm teachers in the world were just like, I'm very sorry, this one cannot stay. So,
there is an impurity among us, and its name
yes,
is Patrick.
And it is, yes, yes, like the Salem witch trials, they cast me out and sent me to wander in the wilds of public and eventually Catholic school.
And you just walk the earth like Cain and Kung Fu.
I did, like Cain and Kung Fu. That's right. Absolutely right.
One of the reasons I love talking to you is because very few people in my friends list who I can talk about really nitty-gritty theater stuff, but also like early 90s indie cinema. It's like,
oh sure,
oh, what'd you do today, Patrick? You're like, oh, I cried to Fun Home and then I put on El Mariachi to cheer up, like, you know,
right down,
rad.
Oh sure,
yeah
that's my genre, man. That's my time. I was starting high school when Pulp Fiction came out. That's my, like, that's my stock and trade.
Yeah. I saw Pulp Fiction for the first time. I saw Kill Bill was my first Tarantino, and that, like, blew my mind. It's still my favorite movie to this day. And then I watched Pulp Fiction on my 16th birthday, and I can't remember what exact year that was, but I remember really liking it. And then that's, like, before my movie history is pretty much Star Wars and The Lion King, and a big gap, and then, like, Kill Bill, and then I wanted to learn everything about every movie.
I recently had to, I put a mandate out on my social media to my friends, because there was a lot of Star Wars talk after Rise of Skywalker, which I've still not seen. But I said that I will no longer, because as in my group of friends from high school and college, I'm the movie guy. So they come to me for, like, rulings on these things. And I said, I will not talk about Star Wars anymore on the internet or in text or in any format. If you ask me a question about Star Wars, I will respond with lyrics from Ben Folds 5 Kate. And it has happened a couple
That's
of times. I just said, like, so somebody posted something on my timeline with a couple other people about some comment on Rise to Skywalker. And I wrote, down by the Rosemary and Cameron, she hands out the Bhagavad Gita. And they left me alone. I don't want to
talk
about it.
So good.
Yeah. Harsh times, man. They call for desperate measures.
Yeah, it's moments like this that make me wish you lived in New York so, like, you could be on our podcast all the time. So it's like, oh, I miss Patrick. Of course, it would. As we know, Tarantino Corner is a vaguely recurring segment on Broadway,
yes,
Baby. It
yes,
would
yes,
then
yes.
become a permanent segment.
Highly appreciated, yes.
So what was the first play you were ever in as a kid that was the oh, thank God moment for your teachers, I'm sure. But.
Well, that was Twas the Night Before Christmas was the first one in kindergarten. The first play I was in, though, that was like, because that was a pantomime, really. Like, the teacher read the book and we acted it out. The first play I was in was probably in second grade. I was in a production of The Life of Martin Luther King. I was a narrator. And
that's a heavy story.
It was a heavy story.
Second graders?
I mean, it was the eighth grade. You know, it was the eight-year-old version of that story. I did, you know, it's just a history lesson basically, but so, like, I remember the thing that really happened was, like, so I'm the master of ceremonies, that was the character, and I had to basically had this big script in front of me that I had to read, you know, just reading these large chunks of dialogue standing at a podium. And what happened was, because I just stood there the whole time and listened to everybody rehearse, I memorized the whole show kind of without knowing it. And two things happened on the performance. One was that my mother afterwards told me that, like, the whole time anyone else was talking, you were mouthing their words, which is then something that, like, I continued to do for a little while and had to kind of train out of myself, or I'd be mouthing the other person's dialogue as they were saying it. not a great, like the Actors Studio doesn't recommend you do that. And then, but the other thing that happened was that morning, you know, it's one show. It's just like, you know, it's a basic, just to play for the parents. My friend Andrew Stewart, who was playing the bus driver that kicks Rosa Parks off the bus, was sick and didn't show up. And they didn't know what to do. And I turned to the teacher who was directing and said, I know it, I'll just do it. I said, I can just walk over from the podium, sit down, play the bus driver and walk back. And she was like, all right, fine, whatever, do it, you know? So then I did it. And so it was, but it, and it was, and I knew the lines. I knew all the lines and I knew like the cues and everything, and it was no problem. And it was like a seminal moment in my life of being like, I'm good at this. Like I can do this. This is something I'm good at. I was so comfortable with it. I wasn't nervous. Everyone else was nervous. I was not nervous. And I was just like, no, this is, I can do this. This is fine. This is fun, actually. And yeah, so that was a pretty seminal moment for me at the age of 8.
I love that you kind of can change the conceit of the show where the master of ceremonies starts to bleed into the world. Like mm-hmm. the way like the Sam Mendes production of Cabaret, the MC starts to become mm-hmm. like part of like other characters. So oh, yeah. you accidentally made that show much more visually
much
interesting.
More interesting. Yes, yeah. And kind of confusing to like to be honest. Just like, why does yeah. this kid get such a big part? Was sort of like I think one of the questions people had.
And why is he mouthing all the dialogue?
All the dialogue, yeah. So
it's it funny you mentioned that because I remember I don't know how I know this, but I know that when Will Smith was doing the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and it was his like first big acting thing, he was so like I'm gonna nail this that he learned the entire script. So you can mm-hmm. see in some of those early episodes him like trying not to mouth dialogue along with someone who he's talking to.
Yeah, I've heard that's a problem that a lot of people have. Usually not to the degree where they know everybody's lines, but yeah. I've heard that from other people that that is a thing that people do because you do learn the other person's dialogue when you're doing a show. If yeah. you hear those lines every night, you remember their lines, and it is super hard not to be like, you know, like da ba 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 ba. And then you say something, and then I say something. Because it's also not really acting. You're not really listening. You're just parroting. And that's, you know,
yeah,
that's not great.
Yeah. And I wondered, because I knew that that was kind of a thing, when I did the play to the Disposal over Christmas, mm-hmm.
yeah,
I was wondering, I'm like, oh, is that going to happen to me? And I had a really small part, so I figured no. But the thing is, so our director got sick right before we were going to start. So we had no director, we had no costume designer, we were pretty much just like inmates oh, wow. running the asylum trying to shape ourselves into a show. So I knew this, it was a pretty short play, and so I knew not every word, but I knew like how certain lines were supposed to go out on the page because I was kind of helping with tech and stuff a little bit too. Mm-hmm. And I guess everyone just learned like the spirit of their lines and then mm-hmm. said kind of what they wanted. So every show, much like chess, it was kind of a different show of like, okay, what's this prisoner gonna yell at this other one? It's gonna sound vaguely like Inge, but like
right.
it's gonna be whatever he can remember.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was I feel like there's a This American Life or a Moth something in just what I experienced on that show because
sure.
oh boy, it yeah, was yeah. a and doing two plays at once in the same day in the same space was pretty mm-hmm. pretty crazy. And so you started very young and then you continued being a theater kid in high school. Yes.
Yes. I was the theater kid in high school. I was the lead in the high school shows. I was in high school that I got into movies though, as I say, cause it was like the indie movie boom of the 90s. And, so when I went to college, I was actually a media studies major and then a film kid after that, and then went to film school. And so I didn't do theater really. I did a little bit here and there. I get hired to write plays, children's plays, and I directed and wrote plays for friends, but movies was kind of my focus. I did the New York Fringe a couple of times, but it wasn't until about 6-7 years ago that I decided to really get back into theater as like my full-time gig and kind of give up on. I've been making web content in LA, which I found to be demoralizing and pest. And so I was just like, I don't want to do this anymore. And what's the opposite? Because one of the things I didn't like about it was the speed. Like we weren't ever really making anything. I was just generating literally content. Like I was like filling.
Oh.
wasn't ever really working on characters. We weren't working on the scripts. I would just write these things on a Monday, we'd shoot it on Tuesday, and it had to be online by Wednesday. Like, it was just really that fast.
Yeah, it's like you made a hat, but did you finish the hat?
That's exactly right. Yeah, it was just, well, and it was more the fact, it wasn't the fact that I was doing it that fast. It was the fact that the people I was working for did not care. They didn't care.
Yeah.
About the quality, it just needed to be there. It needed to be this long. It needed to be on this topic, and that was all they cared about. And after doing that for about a year, and getting paid—not getting paid well, but getting paid—it was a real like, I don't want to do this, and this isn't what I signed up for. I'm like Ian McKellen in that clip from shooting The Hobbit, where he starts crying because he's just like, this isn't what I signed up for.
Wait, what? I didn't know that existed.
There's a video floating around somewhere. I think he was shooting The Hobbit, but it might have been during Lord of the Rings, where like they're doing like. They're filming him in Bag End, and they're like moving the camera. Like, it's all green screen talk around him, like for 10 minutes. And he just starts to like break a little bit and being like, this isn't why I became an actor.
Oh my God.
So it is. Yeah. But in any event,
I'm just being Magneto.
I want to be. Yes. So Ian. So I wanted to write. I just wanted to do it. I wanted to make something, and I wanted to take a while to do it. And theater takes time, you know, especially if you're a writer, it takes a long time. And so I wrote a play, and it got produced here in DC and was very well received. And that was sort of the beginning of that. And then I became, because all those years of writing, of making lots of web content, lots of videos, very fast, I have developed the... my personal philosophy of writing, which is the A.J. Liebling quote, I can write better than anyone who can write faster, and I can write faster than anyone who can write better. And okay. That is kind of my maxim that I walk into a room with. And it's true. I write very quickly for a playwright. I don't write quickly for like a lot of people, but for playwrights, I write very fast because I just have written so much. I know myself. I know how to work. And yeah. I'm also not afraid to rewrite. I am famous in D.C. anyway for throwing out and rewriting large chunks of the script if that's what needs to be done. And since I'm not afraid of that, you know, I can write a first draft very fast because I'm willing to change it later.
I wonder if that comes from your, or at least, I don't know if it would might maybe come from, or maybe it's just part of how your brain is set up, that because you understand film so well that you know, like, hey, if you can't shoot it, it's not Shakespeare. It's no value and being precious about it, so,
and it also
change as fast as you can.
I think it comes from that. Definitely it comes from that different school of writing, where screenwriting is basically just it's the difference between art and architecture. Like, screenwriting is architecture. You're basically designing a building someone else is going to make, and so that is kind of my approach to writing in a certain way, is I'm not the last person who gets hand on this, even though the playwright is the law in the room in a lot of ways. But I also like collaborating. I really like that. I don't like just saying I like collaborating like some people do. I really like to collaborate. And I like, if I'm working with good people, you know, at the end of the day, this thing says, you know, The Velveteen Rabbit by Patrick Flynn. That's what it says on the poster. It doesn't matter whose idea it was. It doesn't matter. Like, I want to put the best possible play on the stage that we can. And if that means that my particular idea isn't the best, or the plurality of creative people in the room, who the director and whoever else go, that scene isn't working, or this scene could be better, then it's my responsibility to fix it. And I also get a charge out of fixing it. I get a charge out of like bringing in new pages. That's so much fun, and handing actors new pages and trying it and fixing the problem. I get really stoked. I love that aspect of playwriting, of being in the room. And my favorite thing to do in the room is like when somebody will go, this scene isn't working, and I figure it out and I go, okay, hang on, give me 20 minutes, I'll be right back. And I leave the room and I write something new, and I come back and they print it out and they hand it out and it works. I mean, that is just, that's the juice. That's the thing that I really, really love. And so you can't do that unless you're willing to toss out what you've written. And also finding the balance, the maturity that comes with, though, you have to find the other side of that, which is knowing like, no, I'm right. Like, this section that you guys aren't saying is right. No, it's well written. There's something else wrong here we need to fix. And when it's the appropriate standing up for yourself on that level. It's just finding the balance.
There's a balance. Like, there's a big balance between, you know, willing to just go, oh, it's not working, let's throw everything out, which would be stupid. And then be like, Jonathan Larson, I'll throw a tantrum if anything you say is wrong with my 5-hour rent, which had to be cut into 2.5.
But he did fix
it.
He did fix it. You can throw the tantrum on Friday as long as you fix it on Monday. That doesn't matter.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
the maxim I live by.
That's what it's got to be. You can throw the tantrum all day long. If that's what that's your process, as long as you actually do the work when it's time to do the work.
Tantrum and typing. Yeah. So what's a show that we haven't covered on Broadway Baby that you really want me to know about?
I really want you to do Jekyll and Hyde.
Okay.
Because it's bananas. But it is also really, really, it's again, like chess, just completely incomprehensible, which is so much fun.
Okay.
It is such a big show, big musical theater show that has some lovely moments in it and some wonderful stuff. And is also completely insane. And so those are the shows that I tend to gravitate towards. I'd have to go back through your catalog and really dig in, because you did do She Loves Me, which was like one that I think was missing. But like, I think there's also something to be said for, you know, as you graduate up in your progress, because like in Broadway Baby, when we did Chess, I think I said to you at the time, like, this is your first flop. Like, you need to really learn about the flops. That's when you become a true, you need to go to Joe Allen's and be like, I know that show, and I know that show, and I know that show, and I know that show.
Bring back Birdie.
There you go. Glory days. So you do those shows and that's, you go like, yeah, this is crazy. This doesn't work. This is bonkers. But I love what it was trying to do. Or I love what it almost is. I love what it thinks it is. That's fun. That's real theater.
Yeah.
That's so much fun.
Yeah. One of my favorite things to do is I watch the show Westworld, because everything about it is amazing, except the writing I think is really bad. So I'm just like, what does Westworld think it's doing? Because none of this makes sense.
None of it works.
None of it works, but it's beautifully acted and directed it's like a terrible show that's this close to being the best show I've ever seen. It's so crazy. So Jekyll and Hyde, who was anyone I know that would be like a name was involved in Jekyll and Hyde?
Well, Frank Wildhorn wrote the music, Leslie Bricus wrote the lyrics, and I believe you wrote the book too. And there's a video of it starring David Hasselhoff. Do I need to say more than that?
No, you don't. Yeah. I just got Broadway HD, and I actually, it's funny you bring it up, because I saw it too. I was like, oh, Jekyll and Hyde, I wonder if that's good. And now it sounds like it's not, but that doesn't mean I shouldn't watch it.
No, you should absolutely watch it. It's terrible. You should watch every second of it.
Just speaking of terrible, did you end up seeing Cats?
Not yet. I will see Cats, but I have not seen it.
It's the greatest comedy
I've ever seen in my life. I'm very excited to see it.
When this is all over, we are going to do a Broadway Baby commentary episode.
Oh, cool. That'd be good.
I can't wait. Because also I want to start doing movie commentaries, but especially Cats.
Oh, Cats will be so much fun.
Because we all saw it together. It was so good. Well, we're at about time, Patrick. Thank you so much for joining me. I love your show, and I want all of our listeners to know about you.
Yes. No, it's great. It's so much fun. It was so fun to connect with you guys after the show started, and you specifically, and because I knew Kimberly from Broadwasted, obviously. But this is great. It's so great to be a part of the Broadway Baby nation. We'll call it a nation.
Yes.
It's a nation.
Well,
we call it the
BC, the Broadway Baby Cinematic Universe.
So I'm part of the BC. Yeah, BBC.
Yeah. And I feel like if the Schmidts are my Broadway parents, you're like my really rad Broadway
uncle. Right, I'm the fun uncle. Yeah. And I'm good at being a funcle. I'm a good funcle.
Yeah. And Brian and Kevin are like my cool cousins. It's like, it's a big family.
It's a weird family you've developed here, but I'll take it.
Well, thank you so much for joining me, Patrick. Listen to the original cast. You're Unknown Penguin.
Yes, I am.
Twitter.
On all
anything
the
else
things.
You'd like to plug?
Nope, that's it. Go to unknownpenguin.com and figure out what I do. That's
all right.
Cool.
We'll see you next week on Broadway Baby, everybody.
Right.
Bye.
Bye.